The arguments advanced against the subpoenas were neither nuanced nor novel. The Attorney General's suit was, frankly, tossed out of court on its ear.
State Senate leaders fined Todd Palin and 9 state workers in contempt. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 6th of February. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, U.S. lawmakers hope to hammer out a stimulus package by this weekend.
It was time to make a deal and make it happen, and I think that's what you're about to see.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
The state Senate today found 9 state employees and Governor Palin's husband, Todd, in contempt for not conforming to legislative subpoenas last fall as part of the investigation of the firing of Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan. None of the 10 were punished. Judiciary Committee Chairman Hollis French, who directed the investigation by a special counsel, presented the resolution to the entire Senate, saying it's unlikely that the events of last fall will ever happen again, but that the issue needs to be settled.
The Judiciary Committee subpoenas were issued in strict conformity with the law, essentially ordered those witnesses to appear before it. The subpoenas were lawful, and the subpoenas were disobeyed. Mr. President, we've been called a nation of laws, and in our system of government, an order is an order unless it's been countermanded by a higher authority. The Attorney General did bring suit questioning the validity of the subpoenas. However, you will see from the timeline in the resolution that he waited until the last moment to do so. The arguments advanced against the subpoenas were neither nuanced nor novel. They did not persuade the first judicial officer who considered them. The Attorney General's suit was, frankly, tossed out of court on its ear.
While finding the 10 people in contempt, the resolution sets no penalty on them. French explained that they all quickly complied once the challenge was rejected by the court. French said the resolution does not answer questions about what he called serious and significant actions by Attorney General Talis Kohlberg. University of Alaska President Mark Hamilton wants to open more doors to education for the state's high school graduates. In a presentation to the House Finance Committee this week, Hamilton said more than 10 years ago, the legislature wanted him to prepare more Alaskans to join the state's workforce. And he said that now the university has become the biggest engine for jobs in the state. But he added, while nearly 80% of U.S. jobs do not require a 4-year university degree, they do require some sort of post-secondary education.
The trades are not an alternative to scholarship. You need very high achievement in reading and writing and math in order to be able to qualify. This is not our grandfather's union. These require very significant skills, and skills that are sometimes not given in the first 12 years.
He said going to college does not mean taking a 4-year course, especially when the university continues education with the community colleges. He said his top priority for the year is to reach out to local schools to direct students to continue with education.
That's important because we have $1.4 billion in this state that leaves the state every year in the hands of a payroll check to a non-resident of the state of Alaska. The university provides jobs for residents and begins to affect that equation.
For the budget decisions the committee will make, Hamilton said vocational training is very expensive because it requires small classes conducted by people who are already qualified to work in higher-paying trades such as welding and nursing. Lawmakers, however, are having trouble justifying some of the budget he is asking for. Anchorage Republican Anna Faircloth told Hamilton that many students and instructors lobbying for the university also oppose how the state will raise the money through resource development. She said their concern is idealistic, but they don't understand the state's economy and have no alternative but to raise the money they are looking for.
Help me here in understanding how I should advocate funding more for an entire group that really doesn't want to see development go forward.
You can hope, as I do, that these students will mature over time. It's always been the role My God, it was the role in the 60s. This didn't just happen. And it isn't just in Alaska. We probably have the most conservative faculty and the most conservative student body that you will ever meet. I mean, thank goodness you're not representing Berkeley. The fact is that they will grow up, they will mature, and they'll see the world as it really is.
Hamilton asked that the university not be judged on those who are passionate about things everyone cares about but haven't learned to balance the arguments. He said he won't send students who will say things they do not believe in when asked, and he said Faircloth's response to the students was also a learning experience for them. Faircloth is chair of the House subcommittee that will take the initial look at the university's budget. U.S. Senate Democrats say they've reached a tentative agreement with some moderate Republicans on the economic stimulus bill. The massive funding package could go to a vote as soon as tonight, but senators are saying it will likely be tackled this weekend. A group of moderate Democrats and Republicans led an effort this week to bring the bill's price tag down. Members say they're brokering a compromise that could trim spending from $900 billion to about $780 billion. Alaska Democratic Senator Mark Begich said outside the Senate chambers tonight that 42% of the new version is tax relief.
There's been a lot of give and take on both sides of the equation, both on the tax side as well as on the infrastructure side. And I think we'll get close to about the 780, 790 number. And that will, I believe, bring the necessary folks over to vote for this bill. And the end result is we're moving forward on bringing the jobs to this economy, helping President Obama rebuild this economy that is critical.
Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski joined their talks yesterday but did not attend their meeting today. Her office says she needs more time to see details of the new plan being floated before she decides how she'll vote. Murkowski has not been named as one of the Republicans planning to support it. Begich says he believes the group of negotiating moderates helped pave the way for the Democratic leadership to agree to cuts.
I think in a lot of ways the bipartisan group made a big impact in helping kind of push this to where it is right now, that it was time to make a deal and make it happen. And I think that's what you're about to see.
Senator Begich has introduced an amendment that would add spending of nearly $40 million on fisheries. It would fund scientific research and create fishing jobs through the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act. Whether the amendment will get anywhere remains to be seen.
I will have that on the table. We'll see. I may, you know, I'd like to bring that forward. It's in the hopper. But if we have to wait another day to do that, we will wait another day. This is important to move this bill forward to create the jobs in this economy. It is critical.
The Senate has been tackling amendments for the last 2 days. Just where the cuts would come in the latest $780 billion version of the stimulus package are not yet known, although funding for states and educational programs were on the chopping block. Federal prosecutors have admitted another error in the case of former Senator Ted Stevens. The head of the Justice Department's Public Integrity Section, William Welsh, says he made a mistake when he told the court that government employees mentioned in an FBI agent's complaint wanted their story to be made public. In a letter to the court, Welsh says none of the government employees mentioned in the complaint gave their consent to have their names released. FBI agent Chad Joy's complaint, filed in December, alleged a fellow agent and prosecutors violated rules during the Stevens trial. At first, only a heavily redacted version was publicized, but last month the court released most of it, revealing who Joy was accusing. Welsh also apologized for an earlier mistake using the phrase whistleblower when referring to Agent Joy. In fact, Joy was not legally granted whistleblower protection status. After the court received Welsh's letter, lawyers for Ted Stevens said it's another reason to dismiss the case. They told the court yesterday that enough should be enough and that the prosecution is tainted. Judge Emmett Sullivan, who presided over the Stevens trial last fall, is holding a hearing next week to go over recent motions and developments. A sentencing date for Stevens has not yet been set. Currently, the former senator is still living in Washington, D.C. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new attack on the state's predator control program.
To manage for all Alaskans, every user group needs to have a seat at the table. We don't have that now, and that is the crux of our problem.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP. Giving back to the community is a priority because so many at BP call Alaska home. If you're an artist who expresses yourself creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance, you may be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Awards grant. You can learn more online at rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
In acknowledging Governor Palin's increased national notoriety, the conservation group Defenders of Wildlife is enlisting celebrities to raise the profile of their fight against Alaska's Aerial Predator Control Program. Actress Ashley Judd is the voiceover for a short video that criticizes the shooting of wolves. Judd begins the ad by saying that when Palin came on the national scene last summer, few knew that she promoted the aerial killing of wolves.
Now back in Alaska, Palin is again casting aside science and championing the slaughter of wildlife. Using a low-flying plane, they kill in winter when there is no chance for the wolves to escape. Riddled with gunshots, biting at their backs in agony, they die a brutal death.
Judd goes on to invite people to stop Palin and the killing by visiting the website eyeonpalin.org. The website says Eye on Palin is a national campaign dedicated to exposing Palin's anti-conservation agenda. Wade Willis is the Alaska rep for Defenders of Wildlife. Willis says he is an ecotourism guide, a subsistence fisherman, and hunter. He's lived in Alaska for nearly 20 years. Willis says Defenders is completely against aerial predator control because he says there is no scientific way to verify the program.
Hypothesize that you can just take the keystone predator out of an ecosystem, the ungulates are going to go to a high number and just sit there happily and merrily and never have a problem again, is never been proven or supported by science.
Willis also says the use of private citizens rather than professional wildlife officers in the control program is also troubling. He says the biggest problem is a lack of balance on the Board of Game because there are no non-consumptive users.
And any time you have a board that is an appointed board, you run the risk of having a political agenda trumping the mandates of that board. The mandates of the Board of Game in our Constitution are to manage our wildlife resources for the benefit of all Alaskans. Well, to manage for all Alaskans, every user group needs to have a seat at the table. We don't have that now, and that is the crux of our problem.
Governor Palin just appointed Teresa Sager Alba to the Game Board, a Tok resident with strong ties to sport hunting. Sager Alba is a former president of the Alaska Outdoors Council, a federation of outdoors clubs, and the official state association of the National Rifle Association. Tom Harris is the CEO of the Tyonek Native Corporation. Harris says his corporation is practicing its own predator control program on corporation land around the village of Tyonek in south-central Alaska. He says even though the aerial program raises the ire of some, he sees little alternative for aiding moose recovery in some regions.
If the hunting community cannot keep the predator population at a manageable level, and the state wishes to have a recovery in moose populations, and there really aren't any alternatives other than poisoning and trapping.
Harris says prior to Tyonek's program of controlling bears around the village, there was a 95% moose calf mortality rate in their region, and he says there was 8 bears and 1 moose per square mile.
Our extensive efforts have proved to, over the last 3 years, to provide some respite for the moose, and in fact, we are seeing an increase in moose populations. At that time, we had an estimated 8 bear per square mile versus 1 moose per square mile, and now that is beginning to change. The state property in and around that, and all of it in Game Unit 16, has had some recovery, but it's not been as extensive as our recovery.
No one from the Palin administration made themselves available for comment on the Defenders of Wildlife's latest attack on aerial predator control, but in a written statement, Governor Palin called the ads hypocritical and distorted. Palin claims the program is successful at protecting caribou and moose populations. Alaska Natives represent less than 5% of educators in the state, yet 25% of the population is Alaska Native. Across the state, school districts are struggling to increase the number of Native teachers, but qualified candidates can be difficult to find, especially when budgets are decreasing for hiring any teachers at all. As KCAW's Bonnie Sue Hitchcock reports, Sitka faces the same challenges regarding Native hire that other districts face, but the school board would like to see that change.
Native preference is already a priority in the Sitka School District's hiring policy, but the school board would like to beef up its efforts to attract Native educators. The issue was discussed prior to the school board's regular meeting this week during a work session, which was also attended by several tribal members. Superintendent Steve Bradshaw says normally positions open up when other teachers retire, but with the economy the way it is, people are holding on to their jobs.
No paperwork yet at this point as far as any teacher that's decided to retire. And with the budget looking the way that it's looking, there's a possibility of cuts. So whether we're going to be hiring or not, normally we still will lose somewhere between 4 and 8 teachers because of movement and different things. But I'm with the state of the economy, I'm not sure there's a whole lot of movement that's going to happen this year.
School Board President Tom Conley says funding is going to be a lot more difficult this year than it has been in the past. And with fewer openings in the district, it begs the question
whether it's appropriate or important for us to put some money into doing some recruiting. At a time when the possibility that we're going to have openings in the system is diminishing to some extent.
But all of the board members agreed that while actively recruiting or traveling to colleges that have Native education programs might be costly, making contacts and putting the word out that Sitka is interested would be timely right now. Education programs in-state like APU, UAF, and UAS, as well as colleges down south, are all likely places to advertise with. STA Tribal Career Counselor Freya Johnson told the board that Iliksavik College in Barrow may also be a place to look. Iliksavik is the only tribal college in the state. School board member Molly Kabler says moving forward with making contacts is pertinent and doable, even with a budget crunch.
You know, I think waiting is not it. And rather than spend this money recruiting, we could probably spend a fraction of this in terms of a contract to have somebody who would really begin to track all this information, this research, start consistently calling, finding out who we need to talk to and following up regularly, because that's part of the problem here. I don't think we have anybody in the district who has had this assigned to them that has room.
That led to discussions of how better to partner with either Sitka Tribe or A&B and ANS. Roxanne Houston, Education Employment Director with STA, emphasized the need for Native hire, and while it would have to be approved by the Tribal Council, she says there is room for collaboration.
You certainly have your business to take care of, but if you need help hiring Native people, I'm thinking, and you can't afford it, then perhaps you should ask the Tribe and we can go do some recruiting for you. Mm-hmm. It's a commitment, but we need a commitment from the school district as well.
School board member Cass Pook says a tribal presence would also lend credence to recruitment efforts once there was a chance to travel and meet prospective Native teachers.
And also at the time that you do send someone out to do Native hire, that it not just be someone from the school district, but maybe also have someone from Sitka Tribes go, because when they make a contact with another Native, that is a welcoming sign, not to say, and I don't want to offend anybody, but it's going to be more personable to take a Native person with you when you go to recruit.
No decision was made during the work session, but there was unanimous support among the school board to get the ball rolling. Only 5 of the 122 teachers currently employed in the district are Alaska Native. In Sitka, I'm Bonnie Sue Hitchcock.
A Fairbanks group has issued a report that looks at options for increasing Alaska's natural gas supply. The Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation's Interior Issues Council report was prompted by the cleaner-burning, lower-cost attributes of natural gas. Fairbanks' only natural gas is currently trucked in from Cook Inlet, but Fedco CEO Jim Dodson says the supply, which meets a portion of the community's heating needs demands, is running out.
The Anchorage Cook Inlet gas that the 15% of our market is being supplied with today is projected to go below Anchorage needs by 2014. And the contracts that our current gas supplier has are going to expire in 2010. We absolutely need in Fairbanks to maintain that 15% and expand it beyond that.
The report looks at several natural gas development proposals, including an in-state bullet line and a plan to liquefy gas on the North Slope and truck it to Fairbanks. Report Committee Chairman Frank Abegg says getting more gas into the region could involve both projects in a two-stage approach.
The LNG, to me, is a short-term solution for Fairbanks, but the bullet line is a long-term economic engine for Alaska in general.
The report also details how a North Slope gas processing plant could also be used to make propane for shipment to bush villages. Fedco Energy Project Manager Jomo Stewart says Fairbanks needs to transcend the regionalism that's impeded progress on energy solutions in the past.
There's some real synergies here. The bullet line doesn't fly simply on the back of a Cook Inlet or a South Central region. You need Fairbanks built out to be able to accept gas. You need the broader rail belt to have accessibility to that gas, to get the flow rate high enough to make it economic for everyone. You need the North Slope LNG facility to get that wider distribution of gas to the rest of Alaska's communities. This will be a rise together or fall together scenario.
The Fedco report calls on the state to take action to support gas development and distribution. Natural gas is also identified in the report as key to cleaning up air quality in Fairbanks. The community, which currently relies on oil, wood, and coal, has repeatedly fallen short of new Environmental Protection Agency standards for fine particulate pollution and has until 2015 to clean up local air.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
The ebb and flow of earthquake activity continues at Alaska's Mount Readout, but no eruption has occurred. The Alaska Volcano Observatory today said that seismic activity has increased for a couple of hours and remained elevated. Cameras revealed no activity outside the volcano. The chairwoman of the U.S. Senate Committee on the Environment, Democrat Barbara Boxer of California, is pledging to have new global warming legislation before the end of the year. Boxer announced her goals for combating climate change earlier this week.
Clearly, we've come together on a set of principles. We're very specific on these principles, and we believe that this moment marks the beginning of our legislative effort. We believe we will, in fact, create millions of jobs, millions of green jobs, if this is done. We'll become energy efficient, we'll save money in energy costs, we'll invest in new technologies, and we will be the leader.
Boxer's goals include instituting a cap-and-trade system on greenhouse gas emissions and investing in clean technology and energy efficiency. The committee has 11 Democrats and only 8 Republicans, so Boxer has the power to craft legislation. She says the new bill will be straightforward and not as massive or complex as the nearly 500-page cap-and-trade bill that filibustered last summer.
We learned a lot of lessons. We knew that we didn't have 60 votes. We wanted to test the waters, and guess what the good news is? We got 54 people who were willing to proceed, and a lot of those who voted against us are no longer here, and they're replaced by some of the people standing behind me.
Boxer will face resistance from Republicans on the Environment Committee. Ranking Republican James Inhofe of Oklahoma has fought climate change legislation and called global warming a hoax. The Unisea Pollock fleet is on strike. The strike began when the season opened on January 20th. Captains from multiple boats say they are holding out for higher pay. The other major processors are offering 36.5% of profits, but Unisea is only offering 36%. The captains say they just want to be treated fairly and be offered the same price as everyone else. One captain said it was fortunate that the fishing is starting so slowly this season because the striking boats aren't being hurt as badly. Though the fleet has gone on strike before, it has never been for this long. The Unisea Co-op is negotiating with the Unisea management in Seattle. Unisea President Terry Schaff could not be reached for comment. The pollock and cod seasons are both starting out with unusually high levels of bycatch that could cause problems for the fleet further on in the season. Cod boats are mostly concerned about halibut bycatch. They can only get a certain amount of halibut bycatch per year before the National Marine Fisheries Service closes down the fishery for the year. NIMF's in-season manager Josh Keaton says 2 weeks into the season, cod boats have already caught 180 metric tons of halibut. They are only allowed to catch 525 tons for the entire year. That's one-third of the allowable amount and four times higher than the bycatch rate from last year.
So the only way to, you know, try to avoid high halibut rates is to try to avoid the halibut that sells, but at the same time try to find cod. So it's kind of a balancing act.
Keaton says the fleet will help the situation by voluntarily standing down and waiting to fish until later.
There's just a lot of halibut out there, from what I understand. We have a large recruitment class of halibut moving in the area that they're fishing.
Sylvia Edifa, the co-op manager from Alyeska, says some of her boats have already stood down for a week and have now found areas where there are many cod, but few halibut. But boats have to be careful. Most boats have hard cap bycatch limits associated with them. If they hit their limits, they have to stop fishing, even if the rest of the boats continue going out. Other boats are just limited by the hard cap for the fishery as a whole. One of the issues this year is that the cod quota was increased, but the halibut bycatch limit was decreased. Bycatch is already an issue for the pollock fleet as well. For the first 2 weeks of the season, halibut bycatch in the pollock fishery is six times higher than it was last year. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We'd love to hear your comments about the show. To send us your thoughts, go to APRN.org, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and click on the Contact Us link. Be sure to tell us if we can use your comments on the air, and if so, how to pronounce your name. We had reports tonight from Bonnie Sue Hitchcock in Sitka, Ann Hillman in Unalaska, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.